Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Well, the Quebec Public Housing Group, FRAPU, claims that their calculations that for each F-35 fighter jet that is purchased by Canada, just each one, I believe that the plan is for 65, the cost of a single F-35 fighter jet to buy and then to sustain for I think it's 2 decades costs, you can build 6,400 public housing units.
That's the voice of Canadian author and activist Yves Engler. We speak to Yves today about the conflict in Libya and how the government is using that conflict to justify some domestic policies back home. So stay tuned.
I'm very pleased to have Yves Engler.
Hey, Sylvia.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're someone who has written extensively on the Canadian foreign policies, and you're Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policies really opened my eyes to the kind of implicitness and implication that our government has had worldwide, including in El Salvador. And I mean, it's a wonderful source to really realize what is being done in our name. Today we speak of, you know, the war on Libya, and we hear of a UN-sanctioned humanitarian mission. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about UN Resolution 1973 in terms of our government's readiness and willingness to participate in the invasion of this country.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically there was a UN resolution that ostensibly gave a justification for a no-fly zone, which the justification for this was that Gaddafi's forces were on the cusp of overrunning the major city in the east of Libya, and that large numbers of civilians were going to be killed in this process, and that there was sort of an unfair advantage that Gaddafi's forces had because they had access to fighter jets and different planes and whatnot. And basically, this what went from a publicly justified as a no-fly zone was immediately turned into a justification for bombing Libyan army tanks, bombing Gaddafi's compound, bombing numerous sites all throughout Tripoli, the capital. And basically, the Canadian government has played quite an extensive role in this process. There's half a dozen CF-18 fighter jets. There's a Canadian frigate, 240-person naval vessel. There's four other Canadian, different Canadian military airplanes. And now it's a Canadian general that's commanding the NATO forces. You know, it's a humanitarian rationale, and I think that, you know, in principle, the idea of stopping, civilians being killed. In principle, that's a good idea. Obviously, who opposes that idea in principle? But in practice, in reality, to give the powers, the decision makers in Washington and Ottawa and Paris and London, an inch in terms of intervention, they take an imperial mile, and they've really turned this into just a war on Libya and an imperialist assault on Libya.
I guess what I'm always concerned is equally relevant who the savior is that's coming, right? Because we seen the kind of saving that took place in Iraq, the kind of saving that is taking place in Afghanistan, and the kind of saving that has taken place in Haiti and Honduras. So what are the implications of allowing, as you say, this mile of imperialism to take over? What should we be concerned about?
That's the first thing, right? I think that there's obviously a need for some form of resolution to the conflict in Libya, but the countries that should be spearheading that resolution are certainly not the U.S., Canada, France, and Britain. You know, there's too much historical baggage there, and not just historical, but ongoing. So obviously, countries like Turkey and bordering countries like Egypt, other countries in the world, India, much less historical baggage. So that's one part. But I think that the point that you're getting at is one of the most important points in all of this, is that what this does, what the intervention in Libya does, and the proponents of something called the Responsibility to Protect doctrine, which is a Canadian-sponsored doctrine, and basically says that when there's human rights violations taking place somewhere in the world, mass human rights violations, it's the responsibility of the international community to intervene. And these proponents of this intellectual doctrine comes out of people like Lloyd Axworthy, Michael Ignatieff, the head of the Liberal Party. They've been really pushing for an intervention in Libya, and they see this as a test case for the Responsibility to Protect doctrine. And that's the same doctrine that was used to justify, at least by the Canadian government standpoint, internally, Canadian government justified intervening in Haiti in 2004 and overthrowing Haiti's elected government, and that led to thousands of people being killed, a total deterioration in the human rights situation of the country, further impoverishment, etc. So I think that one of the biggest sort of long-term dangers of what we're seeing in Libya is the undermining of state sovereignty, and not undermining of state sovereignty from a sort of progressive humanistic standpoint, which I would be supportive of, but undermining state sovereignty from an imperialistic standpoint. So giving the powers that be in Washington and Ottawa and Paris a greater justification for undermining state sovereignty of countries in the global south, a tool for the powerful against the weak. Whereas one of the things that state sovereignty, the idea of state sovereignty, gives is it gives some protection from the powerful for the weaker countries in the world. So I think that's one of the real dangers, and that's what you're saying in terms of the history or the ongoing history of Canadian U.S. policy in so many different countries. It's already it's so destructive, and that this intervention in Libya further legitimates the policy of the Washington and Ottawa elsewhere.
The other question that comes up, of course, when we intervene on a local conflict, for instance, in El Salvador, the civil war in El Salvador was exacerbated and made a lot more bloodied because of U.S. intervention, daily, not just funding of the war, but also training of military and the schools of the Americas. The death squads were a direct gift of that kind of saving that was offered to our country. And I always get suspicious, when someone says, well, we have to save them. And I said, well, what kind of saving are we offering? So I want to talk a little bit about our own involvement. Nothing is ever free. You know what I mean? The U.S. bombs that were dropped in El Salvador were not free. We later signed up a trade agreement that basically gave up the country to corporations in the U.S., mining interests. And now we have a very impoverished population where 50% of the children experience hunger and a serious issue with malnutrition, privatized education, and all of those issues. So what is at the core of this benevolent mission in Libya by countries like the States, France, and Canada?
The double standard or the contradictions or the what's being left out. So for instance, 2 years ago, Israel attacked Gaza, left about 1,400, mostly civilians, dead in a brutal 22-day assault that the discrepancy of power between Israel's army and the forces in Gaza is much greater than the discrepancy of power between Gaddafi's forces and the rebel forces. In that case, the Harper government cheered on, the American government cheered on what Israel was doing. That sort of makes you wonder about their sort of motivations in Libya today and how much it really is about humanitarian concerns. And I think that really what the motivations are in Libya are there's a series of them. I think from the Harper government, specifically from the Harper government, and I think for the French government as well, Harper government has an issue about justifying spending between $16 and $29 billion on F-35 fighter jets. I think the mission in Libya provides some level of justification or greater justification for that. And you've already seen some right-wing commentators in Ottawa Citizen, the Vancouver Sun, and the Sun Median outlet that have already connected these two things directly, saying, hey, we need these F-35 fighter jets to be involved in future missions like Libya. So I think it's tight, you know, just the general military-industrial complex is sort of likes to see war. And there's been similar articles about the French motivation in terms of their fighter jets and wanting to sell those around the world and using them in Libya, but that being good publicity for their fighter jets. They got some major Canadian investments in Libya, companies like Suncor, our second biggest company in Canada, SNC-Lavalin, the world's largest engineering company, Montreal-based, that have a few billion dollars worth of investment that have been put into jeopardy with what's going on. And I think that it probably they were threatened with possibly being expropriated by Gaddafi if he would have won, because of his sense of feeling that there was some duplicity on the West's part. And also I think that they probably wouldn't be able to get back into Libya with the bad attention they've received. So there's some particular corporate interests that have, I think, a motivation for wanting to see a change in regime now in Libya. And I think that more generally, the thing that the decision makers are really particularly concerned about is what's going on throughout the Arab region, the revolutions in the Arab region that are a real threat to the dominance of Western policy in the region, and getting control of Libya provides a greater staging ground for control over or influence over Egypt and Tunisia, which both have revolutions that are in flux. And concurrent with that is that what's going on in Libya has really successfully, I think, taken attention away from what the most important, from an American geopolitical standpoint, the most important developments, which is the protests in Bahrain, in Yemen, and in Saudi Arabia, and in that part of the world where most of the world's oil is held, and there's long-standing American-backed monarchies. And I think that the intervention in Libya has really taken away from Saudi Arabia sending more than 1,000 troops into Bahrain to brutally crush the democratic movements there, in terms of what's going on in Yemen to crush the movements, popular movements there, and also the Shia protests in Saudi Arabia, where much of Saudi oil happens to be, where the Shia population is large. So I think that's some of the actual motivations. You know, what they tell us, it's about, you know, saving civilians or whatever, but in reality, it's about a combination of military companies' interests, particular corporate investments in Libya, and more generally a geopolitical control over that part of the world.
That is so important that you point that out, because while in our local economies we are facing serious issues with the giveaways that have been taking place, you know, with trillions of dollars being given to banking and other corporations, we see at the same time a mass erosion in the rights of workers. In Wisconsin, the uprising in Wisconsin has been taken over throughout the country, with people rising up, massive demonstrations that are not being covered while we're talking about this. I should point out, you know, while we're distracted in this humanitarian mission, people forget to continue to push critically or to ask of their media, why aren't you covering this? Locally, what are we ignoring here in Canada while our government is trying to distract us to make us look over there? What are we ignoring locally?
Well, I mean, just a first thing locally, I mean, issues, many cities across Canada, you know, there's issues with public housing. Well, the Quebec public housing group, FRAPU, claims that their calculations that for each F-35 fighter jet that is purchased by Canada, just each one, I believe that the plan is for 65, the cost of a single F-35 fighter jet to buy and then to sustain for I think it's two decades, costs you can build 6,400 housing units, public housing units, right? So 6,400 for each single fighter jet. So I mean, there's issues with social housing, you know, across the country. There's, you know, back in the 90s, they cut the federal social housing program. I think Canada is the only G7 country that doesn't have any form of national federal public housing, social housing. So that, you know, that's one issue that I think the vast majority of Canadians would be in a much better position if that money was put into building social housing. The issues, the list of issues in terms of domestic policy are extensive. Obviously, things like climate change and how little is being done in this country to seriously combat. We're among the leading emitters of CO2, the whole question of the tar sands and the fact that it's just this absolutely catastrophic industrial development that is terrible for the whole world and terrible for the increased temperatures, but also really harmful to the indigenous communities that are around it, increased rates of cancer. The list is a long. Obviously, homelessness is a major issue in many cities across the country. And instead of putting that money into F-35 fighter jets, we should be putting that money into building social housing units for people in need.
There's a report that this morning in the news, and it said that because they are concerned about the loss of lives, I mean, they're dropping bombs. The bombings of the sites were also bombs with depleted uranium. And in the midst of the catastrophe in Japan, it seems a very timely to promote those weapons that the world is rightly concerned about, right? What are we creating in a society where we know this catastrophe will happen? Whose life do we put at risk, and how do we, wage that gamble? Because at some point, you know, it's not when, it's not if, it's when. We always know these things will happen. There was another thing, though, that came up, and I was really concerned. They said, well, they're thinking about arming the rebels. And I thought, that's interesting, because under the United Nations Constitution, you're not allowed to arm. You're not allowed to bring, give weapons or choose the one who will win. You're not allowed to interfere in domestic. What implications, what kind of precedents does this set for the future?
Well, I think that, first of all, it's not a question of whether they're arming. All indications are they are arming the rebels, and that's sort of come out to some extent in the U.S. press. We know that just all over the U.S. media yesterday, day before, about the CIA's involvement in on the ground in Libya. The CIA is providing intelligence, helping out the rebel forces. We know that there's been, Canadian politicians have referred to the fact that Gaddafi has to go, and so they're making comments that are basically saying, they're implying that they're involved in armament or whatever. Lawrence Cannon, the foreign affairs minister, has even said that would the possibility of sending troops to Libya, Canadian troops to Libya, is still on the table. There was just an interview with Harper yesterday or day before, reported in one of the papers I saw, about how he was asked specifically about Canada's involvement in arming Libyan rebels, and he refused to answer the question. He did answer. He said, "Oh, we're not going to send troops," even though Lawrence Cannon had left that possibly open a few days earlier. He said specifically, "We're not going to send troops," but he refused to answer the question about arming rebels. So we should strongly assume that there are weapons being funneled into the rebel forces. Whether Canada is directly involved in that, there's no evidence to say that they are at this point. But there's also there's no reason why we should think that they wouldn't be. So I think that's definitely taking place. This is, it can sound kind of inhumane, but civil wars can be very violent and destructive. But the societies and the countries need to be able to work their figure things out among themselves. And outsiders coming in and choosing one side, or putting weapons into one side, or bombing in support of one side, that tends to lead to conflicts going on for longer. It tends to lead to, even when there is an ostensible end to the conflict, that there is, sort of very distorted and political situation, etc. So, I think that what's taking place and what appears to be set to happen now in Libya is that the intervention of Canada, the U.S., France, and Britain is leading to a longer, more violent conflict, which is going to have, quite destructive consequences for Libyans.
You spoke about how the Canadian government has significantly been increasing its military. I always think, when you have a government that prorogues government because they want to boycott the ability for other parties to be funded, so, only corporations will be able to fund their favorite party, which is the Conservative. when you have a government that simply just, we're just not going to sit, and who chooses to impose budgets that put military ahead of healthcare, education, you have to wonder, why are they doing that, right? What are we facing locally? One of the issues that was raised during this the news report I was listening to this morning was that they said, to avoid the loss of casualties, one of the considerations is to perhaps divide the area, the region, to partition Libya. What would this signify for the Libyan people?
I mean, I think that right away, if it's a partition being administered by the U.S., France, Britain, Canada, that would be a terrible development, because it would be done in their interests. I think most of the country's oil is in the east, so I'm presuming the partition would lead to a partitioning with the rebels in control of most of the oil. So that would obviously be something that the different North American and European oil companies would probably like to see, because the rebel forces is highly dependent upon support from U.S., Canada, France, etc. In principle, partitioning Libya, if Libyans came to an agreement to partition their own country, and that there was that's their democratic right. But that being done by the powers in Washington and elsewhere, that's not fine. That's about weakening Libyan sovereignty, and weakening Libyan sovereignty is another way of saying giving Washington, Canada, and others more power over Libya's affairs. And there's a long history of that the Libyans were involved in, obviously, in fighting against colonialism, fighting against imperial intervention. I think effectively what partitioning the country would do is make Libya more dependent and more influenced and controlled by the historic colonial powers.
We always feel that our governments are this big institution that almost runs itself, but I disagree. I think that as citizens, we have a lot of power. What can people do? Because there's all these things are happening, and our governments are participating in our name. So what can we do?
Considering we're in the midst of an election right now, a very easy thing to do is to obviously vote against the Conservative Party. Clearly, the Conservative Party represents the most militaristic, the most repressive elements of Canadian political culture. But it can't end there. If it's just a matter of voting, that's not far from enough. We need to be engaged. There's the Canadian Peace Alliance that has come out and stated statements against Canada's intervention in Libya. So it's easy to get on the Canadian Peace Alliance's email list to get active with the Canadian Peace Alliance, different chapters in cities all across the country, Stop War in Vancouver. So that's one way. Be informed and listen to community radio, or check out the different websites, the progressive websites, the rabble.ca or zmag.org or many others. But I think that the crux. We have to be engaged, politically engaged, get involved in different either solidarity or anti-war groups, and or local community organizations that are fighting for social housing, fighting for increased minimum wage, working for the different campaigns that make our society better. And I think it really, at the end of the day, I think you're right. It's the power that Stephen Harper or the politicians in this country have. To a large extent, it's dependent upon our acquiescence, and as we see with what's going on in the Arab world, that power that seems so mighty, these are dictatorships for 3 decades long, they crumble when people get organized and take to the street and demand change. The situation is obviously very different in Canada than it is in Egypt, but a lot of the general problems or principles are similar. There is a inequality, growing inequality in our society. There's a disconnect between what the politicians say and what they do and what most of the population wants. Most Canadians want increased funding for education, increased prioritization of healthcare. You look at the surveys, time and again, military funding is way down the list. Yet we have politicians that want to put money into the military, being organized, being constantly demanding these different things, forcing the media, the dominant media, to cover the issues. So it's really about getting engaged, and there's numerous different organizations active on these issues that people can get involved with.
You're beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us. Now, Yves Zingler has written 3 very powerful books: The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, one of my favorites, Canada and Haiti, and his latest, Canada and Israel, Building Apartheid. How can people access your books?
The best is through my website, evesingler.com. evesingler.com, Y-V-E-S-E-N-G-L-E-R .com is the easiest way.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Phil.
Take care.
Cambia lo superficial. Cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.